Okay. Now, I think we're missing two of your colleagues, which was the wrong moment to be absent, but I think we'll have to start because the Secretary General has a tight agenda, and I want to thank him for agreeing to meeting you. It's a privilege indeed for me to introduce the Secretary General. As we said before, this will be an on-the-record session. Secretary General will make some opening remarks, and following that we will open the floor for questions. And I would like to ask you, when we do so, to please identify yourself and your media of affiliation. Secretary General, thank you.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be with you, because the subject is, I think, of great importance. Why the strengthening of the Mediterranean dialogue? Why the Istanbul Cooperation Initiative? Simple answer. A, it's a pivotal region where many things are happening. It is pivotal not only for the security and stability of the region itself, but also pivotal for NATO and for the NATO allies. What happens there determines, of course, not only the region, but determines much more wider circles. Two, the threats and challenges we are facing are exactly the same. In the former decades, when there was still a Soviet Union and a Berlin Wall, there was a NATO which defended against a possible invasion by the Soviet Union. I'm of that generation. I got my education in those years. There is no threat. There's Russia, with which we have a very good distinctive partnership, a relationship. But the new threats are, as you know, terrorism, which is everywhere. Proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, failed and failing states. And that is a threat simply we have to face together. Be it in Morocco, be it in Israel, be it in Qatar. If I mention nations, I should mention the principle on which the NATO heads of state and government made their decisions in Istanbul last year. And I think they are important principles, and I repeat them very briefly. First, non-discrimination. All Mediterranean dialogue and ICR partners are offered the same basis for practical cooperation, where they make their choice. It is a form of cooperation on the basis of added value from both sides. I mean, there's added value for NATO in cooperating with the nations in the framework of MD and ICI, and there is, I hope, added value for the nations concerned. But they make the choice. And NATO thinks there are a number of relevant fields in which we can cooperate. Second important principle, self-differentiation. A tailored approach to the specific needs or wishes of each of the partner countries. No one size fits all. Point number three, a two-way street. If I talk about added value, you can never have a one-way street. You can never have NATO to come and say, let's impose ourselves. Let's see what's in it for us and not what's in it for you. Fourth, I mentioned it already, no imposition. NATO has no ambition to get involved in the domestic dynamics of the MD and ICA countries. Let me give you one example. Of course, for the region, it is of the utmost importance that the solution will be found for the Israel-Arab-Palestinian conflict. Of the utmost importance. But NATO is not seeking a political role. I mean, we have the quartet. We have the nations concerned, and some of yours have a direct interest. We have the neighbors. We have, of course, Israelis and Palestinians themselves in the first place. NATO is not seeking a role there. But NATO is, of course, very much interested. The Allies are very much interested in what is happening. Of course, we have applauded Gaza disengagement. We hope that this will be an important step on the road to the lasting peace and a durable settlement in the region, which is, I think, in the interest of all of us. Fifth and final principle, complementarity. Mediterranean dialogue and ICI are complementary to other international initiatives. NATO is not going to duplicate what the European Union is doing, for instance, in the Barcelona process. NATO is a political-military alliance. NATO is a different animal than the European Union. NATO has specific things to offer. Specific things, be it advice on defense reform, be it military-to-military cooperation, be it exchange of intelligence, be it assistance in training, be it listening to what's going on in your countries, what their analysis of the situation is. I've traveled, and I'm going to Egypt on the 12th of October, all the Mediterranean dialogue partners, and I am going to travel to the ICI partners as well. You know, in the ICI up till now we have Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates,
Kuwait.
And Kuwait, of course. Kuwait was the first. I think I started with Kuwait. Anyway, and we see an interest in Saudi Arabia. We see an interest in Oman. They have not yet formally, that's their decision. They're completely free either to join or not to join. But at the end of the year, I'll make a keynote speech in an important seminar in Qatar, where I hope that many representatives from many nations will be present. But you should keep in mind, let's say these principles. The fields in which we can cooperate range from what I mentioned to border security to, well, let me not forget that, the areas of civil emergency planning, offering NATO training courses on civil emergency planning. There's something in it for everybody, and there's something in it for NATO as well, because if I mention exchange of intelligence in the fight against terrorism, it is very important for NATO to exchange intelligence with the countries concerned, because we're all hit by the scourge of terrorism. Those are the basic principles. NATO is interested in the region because the region is pivotal and the threats and challenges are the same. I can stop here because I want to give you as much possibility till 12:30 as possible for your comments and questions.
Thank you very much, Secretary General. We start the first question. Please stay to your media.
My name is Daria Al-Majin. I'm from Ahiyat newspaper. Thank you very much for agreeing to see us. Quickly, I have a few questions, if I may put them. Is Islam a threat to world peace? Does NATO see in Islam a threat? Second, you just saw Prince Turki from Saudi Arabia. I wonder if you can tell us about what the cooperation between Saudi Arabia and indeed NATO. And also, if you can talk to us broadly about NATO and really what's happening with the Gulf.
So three questions.
Islam is not a threat to world peace. And I've said before, let me repeat it, those people who under the banner of Islam hijack airplanes or hijack people should not be allowed to hijack a religion, if you see what I mean. We should never allow Islam to be hijacked by those people who use Islam for their deadly purposes. So my answer to your first question is no, in capitals. But you know, as I, that there are people, unfortunately, who under the banner of Islam do the most awkward things we can imagine and want to destroy the very fabric of our society. So don't misunderstand me. Terrorism is a horrible threat. We see it daily and we see it everywhere. The second part of your question was, I saw His Highness. We had a very interesting discussion on the region. I more or less went through the same points as I just indicated to you. There's a clear interest from the part of Saudi Arabia, but the prince has to go back to Saudi Arabia, has been visiting these headquarters, has spoken to many, I think, important interlocutors, not only Mr. DeSantis, Mr. Bin, but also Deputy Secretary General and this morning myself. I'm happy and glad with the keen interest the Prince was showing in what we are doing in the framework of the ICI. It's of course the completely sovereign decision by the Kingdom itself how they see the next steps, but it is clear that's what I told him and what he told me was running completely along parallel lines. Your third part of your question, I've tried to give you the elements. The ICI is a program which we have started on a bilateral basis. So it is not NATO GCC, it is NATO Kuwait, NATO Qatar, NATO UAE, etc. And let's say the roof under which this takes place is, of course, and that's why this was my very first sentence this morning, the pivotal importance of this region. Think about energy security. Think about the situation in Iraq. Think about Iran and the discussions going on in the IAEA. I say again, and I stress, and don't forget that, NATO is not seeking an active direct role there. But one cannot deny that it is what is going on is relevant to NATO and is relevant to the Allies. Let's not forget that NATO allies are P5 members of the Security Council, that we have 19 NATO allies who at the same time are members of the European Union. You know my drive as Secretary General to realize that this organization has a political military mandate, and that means political dialogue, and that means outreach, that means being interested in what's going on in pivotal parts of the world. Last June it was also decided to focus on the Caucasus and Central Asia, because important things are going on there. Your region is, I say, pivotal in this respect. And that is the reason that I think that apart from the Mediterranean dialogue, which is of course 10 years old already, we had the first political, very important meeting in December of 2004 where all nations were represented at the political level, most of them by their foreign minister. And then, quite rightly so, I think it was decided also to reach out in the framework of the Istanbul Cooperation Initiative.
Yes.
I mean, I have a very different question from my questions are regarding Iraq. You were there just a couple of days ago. I wanted to know that if Iraq asks, would you consider sending NATO troops there, if the government itself asks, or is it not under consideration in any context? My second question is that what's happening in Iraq on the ground basically is terrorism. Do you classify it as terrorism? And do you have cooperation with the Iraqi government or with the Lebanese forces regarding terrorism and counterterrorism missions there?
Prime Minister Al-Jafri, with whom I had the opportunity to have a long conversation, did not ask for NATO forces on the ground, so this is not on the agenda. It was the second time that I was in Iraq. I was convinced, and I'm still convinced, that there is no alternative for the political process. There is no alternative. It's up to the Iraqi to agree on a constitution. It's up to them what kind of constitution they want. But there is no alternative for the political process. Do I see and do I consider what's happening in Iraq as terrorism? Yes, I do consider this as terrorism. Because I think there are people out there, and we know who they are, who want to kill the political process. They do not only kill people indiscriminately. When I was there, they went into a hospital. They killed doctors, they killed patients, they killed teachers. They kill small children. That is what I call terrorism. But the Iraqi government, and that's what I discussed with Prime Minister Jaffe as well, I mean, they should not give in, and they are not giving in. There is a referendum on the 15th of October. There will be elections on the 15th of December. And for that process, there is no alternative. But you and I see from day to day the horrible pictures on our television screens. But there are also people out there who do everything they can to make the political process in a success. And let's not forget, the millions of Iraqis withstanding the enormous risk that they might be killed went to the polls at the end of January. I still have those pictures in my eyes. What NATO is doing, NATO is answering what is, according to the Iraqi government, their first priority. Please train our military leadership so that as soon as possible we can stand on our own feet. That is what NATO is doing in its training mission. I had the privilege with Prime Minister Jaffri of opening what we call the Joint Staff College in Arustamia, near Baghdad. NATO is training inside, NATO is training outside Iraq. NATO is equipping the Iraqi army. Very soon, 77 Hungarian T-72 tanks will arrive for one of the Iraqi divisions. There is no alternative for the political process. Because we should not imagine, and I cannot imagine in Iraq, in that pivotal region, which would not be secure and stable, because that would be a big risk, not only for Iraq, not only for the region, and here I come, the threats and challenges are the same, but for all of us. For all of us, because that Iraq would be an exporter of terrorism. What did we see in Afghanistan on the Taliban? Afghanistan was an exporter of terrorism. And when I have to explain to a sometimes critical audience, why are you spending millions of dollars in Afghanistan as NATO? Why are you going to expand ISAF considerably? Why are you going to around 14,000 military forces there? I say, Because if we don't, and Afghanistan would fall back into that black hole again, the consequences will be felt in Saudi Arabia, in Egypt, in the Middle East, in the Netherlands, in Belgium, and everywhere. And the same goes, of course, for a scenario where things would go wrong in Iraq.
How do you enable see this area? It's true, it's not really troubled area, but it's not seen as well. What about this problem of Occidental Sahara? And you've got this GSPC, which is possibly related somehow to Al Qaeda.
What is GSPC? Sorry for my.
What is the French, what is the French acronym? C'est en français?
Oui, c'est en français, GSPC, c'est le groupe
salafique. Salafique, oui, 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 d'accord, d'accord, je comprends, oui.
Le groupe salafique, c'est
un groupe
de combat.
Oui, 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 yes, I know.
So, can you tell us...
Well, first of all, why is the Maghreb, why is Northern Africa important? It is important because those nations are bordering the Mediterranean, with the exception of Mauritania, but those nations are bordering the Mediterranean. NATO is running an anti-terrorist naval operation in the Mediterranean, which is also an area which should be secure and stable. So there is a keen interest in security and stability around the Mediterranean Sea. And if you go north, you see the NATO allies there. You go from Spain to Italy to Greece to Turkey. In other words, there's a keen interest in the region. According to the principles I mentioned, and I had a long President Bouteflika took 4 hours for the conversations I had with him. So I had a really fundamental and long conversation with him. It is clear that we should make this distinction about what NATO's ambitions are and what they are not. Algeria has, unfortunately, also a lot of experience with terrorism. And many, many Algerians have been killed in the process. And we have seen President Bouteflika's initiative to see how Algeria can analyze that past and perhaps make a fresh start. So this is, of course, for me, very interesting. I report those things back to the ambassadors here at the NATO headquarters. But I stress that NATO is not seeking a direct role, and NATO is not voicing an opinion on the political process, which is basically internal Algerian. We do not do that. We do not do that. But we can learn a lot from each other. Operation Active Endeavour in the Mediterranean, the naval operation, has a keen interest from a number of nations in the region, because it's anti-terrorist. To what ports are these ships going? What do they carry? Have they wrong intentions? It is as relevant for the ports in Northern Africa as it is for the ports at the southern flank of NATO, so to say. Exchange of intelligence, perhaps participating in one way or the other in Operation Active Endeavour, not necessarily by sending ships, but by giving other forms of support in ports. I might tell you that from January onwards, we'll see a major development in this Operation Active Endeavour. You'll see two Russian warships sailing side by side with NATO ships in the Mediterranean in the framework of this anti-terrorist operation, which is a NATO Article 5 operation. Could you have imagined this a few years ago? It's a NATO Article 5 operation which was organized after 9/11. And the Russians have now said, we come and join you because we have the same interest. And I think what Moscow has decided is I mean, I encounter the same kind of reasoning in the capitals, be it Algiers or be it Casablanca or wherever I go, as I feel in Moscow.
Okay.
It's always regarding that same area. How would you describe this area terrorism-wise? Is it a high threat in the conflict?
I don't know, but I can tell you, terrorism is everywhere. It strikes everywhere, and we, in all our nations, be it my home country, the Netherlands, or Algeria, or wherever, we have to be aware that these terrorists strike everywhere, and what they are after is to destroy the fabric of our societies. Now, how nations and how the people in those nations want to have their society, that's up to them. I mean, that is not a NATO responsibility. But we think that NATO and the nations relevant think, my interlocutors, presidents, prime ministers, ministers, indeed think that we all have a great interest in as much common effort as possible to fight this scourge of terrorism. And that is what we do. We all suffer from it. And let's not make the mistake, your first question was an excellent one, madam, let's not make the mistake that we link that to Islam. That is nonsense. Unfortunately for Islam, many terrorists use Islam, or I should say misuse Islam, hijack Islam, with all the consequences for that very important religion. And that's what I do not accept. I don't always have it easy, I can tell you, in your region, when I come as NATO Secretary General, and I always have a public event with students, with academics, with think tankers. NATO's image in your part of the world needs improvement. Because many people think about the old NATO, I don't need to explain. But what I do, and what we do, and what Mr. DeSantis is doing, is in the framework of public diplomacy, work on that image of NATO. Okay, I'll not be too long because I want to give everybody the opportunity to speak.
Sorry.
You just mentioned that you went to Egypt. I would like to know, Egypt at this moment is engaged in discussion between what's happening in Israel nowadays, especially around the Gaza. Mm-hmm. Are you willing to offer them any solution and involve with this?
My answer, madam, is no. I spoke at length to Foreign Minister Abu Ghait in New York 2 weeks ago, and we prepared my visit to Egypt. NATO has applauded Gaza disengagement. NATO realizes the important role Egypt plays and other neighbors play in this whole process, and we know that Egypt is very much involved, was and is involved in Gaza disengagement, and is taking extra responsibilities to see that the situation at the southern border remains secure and stable. And I think it's important that Egypt is one of the most important regional players, plays that role. NATO is not seeking, and I'm not going to Cairo, to give any advice. It's not up to NATO to give advice, neither to seek any specific role. The purpose of my visit is the fact that Egypt, as an important player, wants to talk to NATO, and NATO wants to talk to Egypt about all the elements I've been mentioning up till now. And I mean, you will agree with me that it would be absolutely impossible to miss Egypt, given the fact that this country is playing such an important role in the region. So I'm very much looking forward to meet Minister Abu Ghait, hopefully to meet the President, and other important interlocutors.
One and two. Me? Yes, you first.
Your Excellency, it's good to see you again. I have to admit, you look younger.
Well, thank you so much.
No problem. Is it true, Your Excellency, that Israel has applied, or actually offered to join NATO?
No, it's not true. I know that in certain academic circles in Israel, this discussion comes up from time to time, but Israel has not applied for NATO membership. I've been to Israel, I got this question, and I gave the same answer there. Israel is ambitious in working together with NATO. I applaud that Israel is ambitious, as Egypt is ambitious, by the way, and other Arab nations are ambitious as well. Our partners cannot be ambitious enough, and it also goes for Israel. And what is important, I think, in my position, and what I enjoy, that's a nice thing of my responsibilities, and I have the opportunity to speak in Israel with Prime Minister Sharon, to go to Egypt and speak with Minister Abu Ghait and hopefully the President, to speak to President Bouteflika, to speak to my Saudi interlocutor Prince this morning, because it gives me the opportunity. I'm not the mediator, but to get a grasp of what's going on in the region. I say again, without one of the important principles, without NATO having any ambition, to approach the domestic or internal affairs, all the affairs of the region, as far as, for instance, the Israeli-Arab Palestinian question is concerned. But NATO, as an organization interested in the region, of course, will immediately applaud Gaza disengagement, and will even more applaud a just and final durable solution for the Israeli-Palestinian problem, of course.
Last question.
Abdullahi Moroccan News Agency.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Je parle français de toujours, n'est-ce pas, si je suis à Maroc. But I think I think not everybody might understand. And my Arabic is not that developed. So.
Well, last February you were the first Secretary General of the NATO to visit Morocco, where you met with several officials, including King Mohammed.
His Majesty, yes.
I would like to ask you, I mean, how do you assess the cooperation between Morocco and the NATO, I mean, after your visit, particularly, I mean, in terms of the exchange of information regarding terrorism and the acting in the operation? My second question is that there is a talk about the setting up of a Mediterranean network for the struggle against terrorism between Spain, Morocco, and France. Mm-hmm. Is NATO engaged or involved in this operation in any way?
Not as such, but we follow it, of course, with great interest, because I think any, let's say, joining hands and joining forces in the fight against terrorism is very welcome. NATO, as an alliance, is not involved, but NATO allies are. And if I have my weekly lunch with the NATO perm reps, the Spanish ambassador, or when we discuss it, you know, we have this 26 plus 1 framework in the Mediterranean dialogue, 26 plus Morocco, we have the 26 plus 7 framework, we have even the 26 plus N framework, as we call it, that you have nations who have a common interest in discussing with NATO. So we are informed about this. When I come to my conversation with the King and the states of play in the Morocco-NATO relationship, I think it's developing very well. I think it's developing very well indeed. I do not know exactly where we are. I have to look to Mr. Santis where we are on active endeavor, but Morocco showed a keen interest. In active endeavor. So I presume discussions are going on in Morocco.
There's been the signing of the security agreement, well, the protection of classified information, which also will enable this cooperation.
Right, so which is such an agreement, as Mr. Sand is mentioning, is the, let's say, the foundation for the exchange of intelligence. You have to come to an agreement on what do you do with classified information, because the Moroccans do not want their classified information to be on the streets, and NATO doesn't want its information to be on the streets, to be read by everybody, specifically not by those people who have motives we don't like very much, to put it mildly.
But actually, I saw it for last year when we met here, I mean, part of the Islamic press coming from London, you expressed some kind of discomfort and concern regarding the cooperation between Morocco and NATO on this particular issue of active engagement.
I can't remember that. Discomfort, no.
Not really, I don't.
No.
But I was there.
But I've always felt very comfortable about the NATO-Moroccan relationship. I was received by the King. I met other very important... I cannot remember, neither can Mr. Sandy, that I've ever expressed discomfort. On the contrary, I have recognized the positive feeling in Morocco. And as we have signed the security agreement, I mean, what we are doing is working closer together. No, on the contrary, I feel very comfortable indeed.
I would like to...
Je me sens extrêmement confortable.
Yes, you have a
relation with Morocco. Extrêmement confortable.
Arabic word?
Can I just fulfill, Me?
Yes.
I'm afraid.
Shukran. Thank you.
Shukran. I thank you very much. It was a pleasure, albeit.
To see you more, Secretary. If you want to get your word out, you have to see us more.
You are welcome. I mean, I enjoy these conversations.
Yeah, we did too.
If you want to do this on a more regular basis,
yes, we should.
Mr. Santos is my witness. You are welcome.
Okay. Yes.
Welcome. Honestly, you're welcome.
Yes.
And also, all the trips are that the Secretary General is paying and will pay to the region are a great public diplomacy opportunity. I think he's the great public diplomacy.
I'll make a speech in Egypt in Cairo. I met the Egyptian Institute for Foreign Affairs.
Yes.
They are organizing it.
Yes.
Minister Abu Ghait is fully cooperating with this. I need it because I say again. If you build trust, Trust starts with having the right perception about each other, the right perception of NATO in the Arab world, the right perception of the Arab world inside NATO. And then sometimes people will say the perception is wrong, and then I say, yeah, that might be that the perception is wrong, but nevertheless it is a perception, and we have to address that perception. I enjoy my visits, I enjoy these conversations. If you want to do it on a more regular basis, you have my solemn promise that I will.
Thank you.
And Mr. Sanders, my witness. Yeah.